Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello.
Hello.
When you arrived tonight, you said you caught a glimpse of me through the window and you could see my reflection in a mirror. Mm. And you said that my face didn't fill with joy when the doorbell rang.
You didn't punch the air and go, "She's here, yes!" You just got up.
I internalised it.
Did you?
What I did do is before I opened the door, and I do this quite often, have you ever seen backstage footage of an actor just before they step out of the wings where they get into character? I went from being a miserable effer to having a big smile on my face in the time it took me to open the door.
You consciously put that smile on your face.
But I was pleased, but yeah. I wanted to show that outwardly.
Okay. Oh dear, is that the stage we're at? You have to tell your face what to do.
What's it say about? Went to the cinema last night.
What did you see?
What do you think I saw?
James Bond.
Yes, yes.
And?
Well, I thought it was excellent.
Okay.
Now, you know me, I don't like to express an opinion without being sure that other people largely think the same thing.
So did you check what everyone else said first?
It's pretty much had universal 5-star reviews.
Oh, well, that'll do.
But even now saying it on the podcast, and you may have heard just a little hesitancy in my voice. I know some of our listeners, for example, Jack, who listens to the podcast, is this huge Bond aficionado. And I haven't checked in on social media what he thinks.
Right.
And I'm sure we've got other listeners who feel similarly passionately. And I wouldn't have minded just doing a quick once around what their opinion was before I express my own, because I don't like being out of step.
No.
Just want people to like me.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it is. But I thought it was excellent. And I don't consider myself, I will always see a James Bond film, but I don't consider myself a fan in a certain way.
Mm-mm.
I feel warmly towards it, but I don't know why that is, given that I do pretty much see every time they release one, I'll see it. And I wonder if I just see too much of myself in him. Why are you laughing? I don't understand why you're laughing.
Yeah, you just really identify with him. I know that's what it is.
Yeah, it's a sort of suaveness.
You're talking about Q, right?
The Which one? Q is the gadget one.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, maybe like Q's of yore, not the young, cool, good-looking one that they have now.
Right.
Really? No, I mean Bond, of course.
Of course.
Why do you not think that? Do you not think I'm suave?
You're suave in your own sort of clumsy
non-suave way.
Sort of clumsy.
What about ruthless? Do you think I'm ruthless?
No, you're not ruthless, no.
What about... It's uncomfortable if I mention it to you because it will now feel like I'm asking you directly, but I want you to talk about this as if you were an impartial observer.
Okay.
What about sort of like the raw sexual charisma? Why are you laughing more at that than at the suaveness?
No.
Or the ruthlessness.
I these are questions I can't answer. So it'll be like my dad asking me if I got sex appeal. Weird.
I think your dad has got quite a lot of sex appeal.
I'm not going to say that.
No, but you know what I mean. You must know what I mean.
No, it's not something.
Does nothing for you.
Stop it. Oh, dear.
Like Bond, Bond would say that I'd like, I'd say Bond would go up to the bar in a pub. He goes to a pub, right, in his tuxedo and says, "Hi, I'd like please a martini, shaken but not stirred. Thank you." That's his catchphrase.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
And then I would say, "Hi, can I have a Diet Coke? But could I have a slice of orange instead of a slice of lemon? I just prefer it with orange."
Very similar. Yeah, you're quite particular with your drink, how you want it prepared. That is very similar.
007 would say, "My name's Bond, James Bond." I would say, Yeah, my name's Jeff. No, no, not Jess. Jeff. Yeah, that's with a G. Oh, and an O. No, the O comes before the E.
Oh, God.
And then it's Lloyd, double L, LL. Yeah, and then the O comes before the Y. A lot of people, for some reason, put them the wrong way around. I don't know if it's, they think it's Welsh and then panic. I don't know why that is. Yeah, you got that? Yeah, I suppose it is a lot of consonants when you mention it, yeah. Yeah, and then having the F and L in the middle is quite strange. Yeah, I see what you mean, really. Which is a bit like having your own thing every time you have to give your name.
Yeah. Very.
I was trying to figure out the first James Bond film that I saw, and I think it was Moonraker. I think I've got a memory.
Is that a Sean Connery one?
Roger Moore.
Oh, okay.
At the cinema. And then I looked it up and I would have only been six.
Hmm.
But in those days, I do feel like you'd go and see all kinds of stuff that perhaps would be boring today's six-year-olds.
There wasn't really much option.
No, and you weren't watching films all the time because, of course, our kids can just watch their favourite film over and over and over again. Mm. Whereas, you know, a film was a rare thing because they weren't on TV very often.
Yeah.
We didn't have videos at that point.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think I remember seeing Moonraker because it was one of the first things I remember seeing at the pictures and then instantly wanting to play it afterwards, you know, being on the way home and say, I want to play it. You know, like where you kind of act it out with your friends. Or
yes.
I don't really have friends. And I mean, I was going to say siblings, but my siblings would have been a bit younger if I was six. So maybe I would want to play it with my cuddly toys.
Oh,
I don't know. It's a shame that leaves you as you get older. It's not like now when I watch an episode of Succession. I say to Sarah, oh, can we play it now? You be Cousin Greg and I'll be Tom and I'll psychologically torment you. I do that anyway. Go on.
Love that.
Playing
acting,
something.
Acting it out. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
Maybe you could start some kind of groups where people act out their favourite. Could be the club.
Isn't that Amdram?
Well, I guess so, but yeah, maybe.
Anyway, I had three things from the cinema, just very, very quickly.
Okay.
Number one, I smuggled in some Froyo because I didn't want to eat cinema ice cream.
Naughty.
Let me tell you something.
That's hard to smuggle, right?
I had a bag.
Oh, okay. You had a lid on it. I'm just thinking.
Yes, it was an open
one.
No, it had a lid on it.
Okay.
Put the spoon in my pocket.
Yeah.
And put the frozen yogurt, in the mop in my bag underneath my raincoat.
Oh, wow. You took it seriously.
Yeah. And it was amazing. It was completely unflappable when I went through. I didn't give anything away. No beads of sweat formed on my face or anything. They didn't frisk me. And I thought, I'm so good at this. I now want to try heroin.
What's the connection?
No, I don't mean I want to try. I'm happy with Froyo. That's fine. I'd rather have Froyo than heroin. I want to try smuggling
heroin. Heroin smuggler.
Through
an airport.
Yeah, I think I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, number two.
Mm-hmm.
This is just an observation. Yeah, over time, the films that they show before the film have got more elaborate telling you how to behave in a cinema. And I think that's only because people just don't know how to behave in a cinema anymore and they need it ramming down the throat. So whereas once, like a bad graphic and a little bit of a music sting telling you not to smoke was enough.
Yeah.
Or a picture of a mobile phone with a red line through it saying no mobile phones might have been enough at some point.
Mm-mm.
Now, if you've been to cinema, I guess in the last couple of years, there's this huge big production which feels like it's got the budget of a Hollywood film itself with John Boyega walking through the world and everybody's heads are in the phones and all this stuff is happening around them, explosions and dramatic things. And he's making the point, how can you really experience something if you're just looking at your phone all the time? So turn it off. It won't just, you know, don't distract other people. Be in the moment. Enjoy the film for 2 hours. You know, he's saying all this stuff in booming Dolby stereo. And the amount of people who were looking at their phones while that was playing because it wasn't the film. So they just instantly shut it out and they're just, it's unbelievable.
Right. They need to go back to just like a simple image that'll catch the attention.
When I spend a lot of time in Sweden, often they would have a person who works in the cinema, usually like a nervous 22-year-old, come and stand at the front and do a little speech.
Oh, wow. That would get the attention, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. You know, just saying, oh, welcome. Thanks for coming. Oh. We're excited if you see the film, but we'd like you to remember to turn your phones up. And that did seem to work better.
Well, you feel obliged when it's a real person, like when you're in an aeroplane and, they do the safety demonstration.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Third thing.
Mm.
So these people, so the seats next to us, the cinema was really, really packed, but the seats next to us were empty. And then at the very last minute, in fact, during that thing telling you to switch your phone off, these two people come in. I was going to mention that they're young people, but that's completely gratuitous, I've just realised.
Okay.
What I've just clocked in myself then is that compulsion that you get when you get older to blame things on the youth.
Right, even though they weren't young.
Well, they were young, but they, you know, their behaviour wasn't particularly the fact that they were young wasn't relevant. I've seen it from all ages. So I've just clocked myself doing that, right?
Okay.
Always trying to resist that urge to, as you get older, like, oh, youth's wasted on the young people. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's true. I just think I'm an old fart and becoming an irrelevance. That's how the world goes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So these young people come in, and as I say, it was during that mobile phone message, so very last minute, which I have to say, if you are that late, you're probably a problem.
Right, yeah.
Because they give the film times, they give you so much margin for error.
Huge, yeah.
And just generally think 95% of the time, if there's lateness, there's something else going on, which is indicative of some other problem, right?
Yeah.
So sure enough, they come in and they're kind of talking and giggling a little bit. And I'm braced. I think, okay, here we go. Right. And they're doing it through the first 5 minutes of the film, which is unacceptable, but I've been trying to work on my rage in the cinema, because you may remember that the only place that I'm ever assertive ever and ever feel confident in confronting people or conflict or anything is when shushing people in the cinema, to the extent that it's got unpleasant on a couple of occasions.
Yeah,
So I'm trying to curb that impulse a little bit.
Okay.
So I set myself the little rule in my head. James Bond films quite often start with a long sequence at the beginning and then go into the titles, the sort of nice animated Bond-style titles. So I thought, if they're still doing it by the time the titles have finished, then I'm going to shush them.
Okay.
And actually, they calmed down. It was fine.
Good.
But I glanced over a couple of minutes later, just to see if they were going to become a problem at any stage.
Mm-mm-mm.
And she's the one who was sitting next to me, was sat cross-legged on her chair like she was one of the kids from Fame or something.
Yeah.
You know, like where a dancer would sit cross-legged.
Yeah.
And her knee, whilst not nudging up against my froyo, not touching my froyo, it was going up at an angle above it. Her knee was into my airspace.
Right, okay.
So what is the etiquette with that?
Can I just clarify one thing? Is it okay just to sit cross-legged if that's more comfortable for you? You think no, okay, because
I think it's a weird bit. Do you not think it's a weird behaviour?
It's quite comfy though.
You've sat cross-legged in a cinema.
I'm thinking no now, because you'd have to take your shoes off, and I think taking your shoes off is wrong.
I'm not sure her shoes were off. So I think, firstly,
the shoes on the seat.
I've seen people do it on the London Underground as well.
Yeah, I'm talking myself out of this. I don't think I have done it, no.
Okay, so
her knee was in your... That's not okay.
So she had this sort of cat-like, dancer-like pose to her, and the knees were
off.
That's
not okay, yeah.
But I didn't feel confident saying anything.
It's hard.
I didn't quite know what the... what the rule is in that situation, because the knee isn't touching me or my seat, but it is in the airspace above my seat.
Yeah. So what did you do?
Yeah, just employed the port protocol and didn't say anything. But I thought, what would James Bond do here in this situation? And he has got that license to kill. I wonder if it's applicable to people who invade your personal space at the cinema. It should be. I don't think I'd be good with a license to kill on the basis of that.
I think it would be a terrible mistake, yeah.
Maybe like a provisional license to kill.
Was that they give him a provisional?
Get K plates.
No, I think that would not be suitable either.
All right, Annabelle, let's hear from drifters.
First one is from Charlotte. 20 years ago, when we were young, fresh and enthusiastic about life, remember those days? David and I were employed as relief managers for a small group of lodges in the Okavango Delta, Botswana. One of the more enjoyable parts of our job involved hosting guests from all around the world, sitting with them at meals and sharing stories over a few glasses of good South African wine. Our lodge chef would usually announce the dinner menu in both English and her local language of Setswana. This allowed the guests to thank her personally and us to enjoy a daily in-joke when she reached the part about the fruit bowl, which was available after dessert, but pronounced it fruit bowl. All ran smoothly until the evening that Kathy, the chef, was taken ill. Her team ably stepped up to prepare the menu, but none of them felt confident enough to announce the menu. No problem, thought David, I'll take over, and I'm sure the guests will forgive me for missing out on the Setswana version just this once. On the night in question, we were hosting just one large group, some delightful Germans travelling together. After an exciting day of game drives and boat trips, they were looking forward to a hearty dinner and some friendly fireside conversation. The start of that evening was one of my favourites, that popular and delicious chilled soup made with tomato, cucumber, pepper and garlic. My husband stood up, requested everyone's attention and started to read the menu. And for tonight's starter, we have Gestapo soup. The room went eerily quiet. I hid my face in my napkin whilst urgently gesturing for the waiter to offer everyone some more wine as my husband stumbled his way quickly through roast beef and glazed carrots followed by chocolate pudding. Sadly, there wasn't even a fruit bowl that evening.
Oh, that's good. I mean, that is just like a deleted scene from that episode of Faulty Towers.
Isn't it? Yeah. It really is. Oh, this is from Anon. Now, this would be a mortifying experience for anyone, but for a drifter, it goes beyond mortifying and out the other side several times over. I've convinced myself there's an afterlife and mine will be forever reliving it on an infinite loop, interspersed with brief periods for me to reflect on how utterly appalling it is. Last summer, when lockdown was partially lifted, I took my sons to a socially distanced circus, which actually sounds quite good for drifters. I spotted a woman there with her daughter who I vaguely knew as our kids were in the same class. I thought it would be only polite to acknowledge her and it would be safe as I could say something non-committal and chit-chatty about the circus. I knew her husband had been poorly recently, but thought I'd seen him back on the school run before the holiday, so I asked after him. I couldn't remember his name at the instant, which was bad enough, but my sense of politeness won over, so I asked her in what I intended to be a thoughtful tone, "And how's your husband now?" She answered, and I can't believe I'm going to type this, "He died." And my fate was sealed. I was momentarily confused as her tone seemed quite bright and breezy. She went on, "I thought the teacher would let the class know." Well, they may have done, but trying to get anything sensible from young kids about what happened at school is impossible. I had the feeling of the ground falling away from my feet and must have been gulping air like a fish out of water. I must have garbled some words of how sorry I was, but I was reeling. At one point, I heard myself saying, "You joke," but somehow managed to stop myself from completing that spectacularly insensitive and inappropriate comment. Fortunately, she had more composure than me and explained briefly what had happened while I tried to reorientate myself. I knew she didn't drive, so then felt duty-bound to offer her and her daughter a lift home. Despite this meaning, I'd have to endure more of the ultimate awkwardness. She accepted, but only wanted a lift to the nearest town, so it was only about 15 minutes of me having to drive with sweaty hands and a white knuckle grip on the steering wheel. I don't know how I managed to drive and spend the rest of the day trying to calm down from the stress of it. We're actually quite good acquaintances now as I've given her more lifts and her kids have been on play dates. But as you can imagine, every single interaction brings me out in a cold sweat and forces me to relive it in excruciating detail. This episode also highlights another downside of being a drifter. As you would expect, I'm on the periphery of the school run and any school events and certainly don't socialise with any other parents, even online. Perhaps if I had, I would have been more aware of the perilous situation. I'm not sure if this can act as a lesson to other drifters. Maybe I'm just hoping I can dissipate some of the red hot acute discomfort by sharing it with like-minded drifters. And this last one is from Stuart Leatherhead. He says, after hearing Annabelle's do-it-yourself involuntary tick and Jeff's you'll be sorry when I'm dead in a voice, I wondered if anybody else had any similar habits to myself.
Oh.
The first one happens whenever I approach a roundabout close to my work. I always think about a conversation slash argument between two colleagues who at one time, many, many years ago, fell out about which lane you should be in when nearing said roundabout. I wasn't even present at this exchange of views and heard the story third hand of someone else. Yet for close now to 5,000 times, I've thought of those two people every time I drive up to it. And secondly, I cannot put on a duvet cover without saying to myself, "Ooh, you're a right old Pollyanna," after hearing Anthea Turner say it whilst demonstrating her duvet putting on technique on some TV programme many, many years ago. Please say it's not just me.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I really like that idea. It's almost like your head is a tape, right?
Yes.
But once something's on the tape, you can't tape over it.
Yes.
So there's these things that you do that just get stuck in there.
Mm.
And every time they get more and more stuck, and sometimes things go on top of them.
You've definitely said before that you've had this. You've got quite a few of them.
I've got loads of them. But I mean, I can't bring them to mind at the minute, but I'll try over the course of the next week as I'm going through life just to note a few down.
I've got one that immediately springs to mind. Like if ever the topic, or if I see, or at any time, like high heels are a thing, I immediately think of someone once saying to me that they wore high heels every day for so long that they tried on a pair of trainers and it made their calves ache. And this person, they would have said it like a comment, like just off the bat. And they will not know that I think about that maybe once or twice a day. Just pops in my head.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
So weird.
Every time I see a calipo, I think of you. I never know how you say it.
A calipo. Calipo. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oops.
you think about calipers, people had.
Yeah, I think I have.
Polio.
So the two things aren't related. Now I'm going to think of that. But I also think of Calipo, right?
Calipo, yeah, yeah.
That you once told me somebody had told you.
Oh, yeah.
It was Spanish?
Yeah, Spanish for
a certain sex act.
Yes, and I believe them like for a long time.
So I can't see a Calipo without thinking of that.
Oh, really?
And now the fact that I've been pronouncing it the same as calipers for all these years. But I mean, I have hundreds of them. I just think that's
the weird associations in your brain.
Yeah. Or, you know, like if you see somebody who's part cyborg in a science fiction film and everything they look at, a little box appears with information. Or in an augmented reality. Like, I've got all these layers of stuff people have said or associations with everything, you know, with everything at this point in my life. And that's only going to get worse as I get older. Or maybe better as my memory starts to deteriorate.
Yeah, maybe maybe you're at a peak at the moment.
Maybe,
it's just downhill.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, I enjoyed all those tremendously. And it'd be great to have some of those kind of weird things that pop into your head.
I like that. Oh, you're a right old Pollyanna.
I think the comedian John Robbins, who does a radio show on Five Live, Ellis and John.
Oh, yeah.
He talks about once reading an interview about Johnny Vaughan saying he gets his best ideas when he's having a shower.
Mm-hmm.
So then whenever John Robbins has a shower, he thinks of Johnny Vaughan in the shower having his best ideas.
Oh, wow.
But it's almost like you get infected with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of baths, so it's not really a problem for
me. It is an infection.
Yeah,
That's what it's like.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a parasite.
So maybe that Calipo now thing is now like gone into the heads of loads of drifters.
And calipers. It's the two of them. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Some more of those, please. It's hello@adriftpodcast.com. Right, Annabelle.
Yeah.
Let's have another way in which you are not a fully functioning adult.
Here's something I wouldn't dream of doing. So the washing machine, you know, that little drawer for the detergent and the fabric conditioner.
Yes.
Never in a million years would I put the fabric conditioner in first. I would say always, every single wash of my life, of which there's been about one a week for the last 30 years, although not including the year I lived in Poland and had no washing machine and there was no laundrette and I had to wash all my stuff in the bath. Every single wash I've done, it's detergent, then fabric conditioner. And it has never occurred to me to do it in a different order. And then I put a wash on yesterday and I thought, shall I mix things up a bit? Spice up my life. Go fabric conditioner first. Did I do it? No, of course I did not. Because there's an insane part of my brain that says, something bad will happen if you change it now. I sometimes had this thought, and I wonder if I'm alone on this. I think I am. That the way my life works is that there's one thing that's randomly assigned to me at birth. For example, the day I decide to put the fabric conditioner in first, and that is a thing that means it's my last day on earth.
Okay.
You don't ever have this. No. No, no.
This reminds me of some of your stuff that if you travel to India, you will die, that you've said in the past.
That's different, but I don't know who I think is assigning these things. I've never thought it through. I've never thought it through how it works, how they know I've done it, and how they then end my life. Never thought it through at all. I think maybe my action triggers an alarm in the control room and they then press the end of life button. I know it's insane, but I don't want to risk it. I've also never used that third compartment of the drawer in the washing machine. Has anyone?
Oh, yeah.
I think it says pre-wash, which I don't understand. Like, it's not like I do a pre-teeth clean before the actual teeth clean, or a pre-hair comb before the main event hair comb. So I've never done that. But for some reason, I don't think if I did that, it would trigger my death. It's completely illogical which things do and don't set off the alarm in this control centre. And I'm trying to think of another example of what I thought would trigger the alarm before. And it's usually really dull things that I do the same way. And then it suddenly occurs to me that I could do it differently. Like the dishwasher, I always unload the bottom drawer first, never the top. That would also risk death.
So you're not doing it for a practice. The dishwasher, you know, a lot of people have a system. It's not because of your system. You're doing it because you think you're tempting fate in some way by doing it.
I have an excellent system for loading it. Unloading it is bottom drawer first, then top drawer. I don't see what practical difference it would make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right.
Trying to think it through. No, I can't see any practical difference. No. Which one do you do first?
It's all to do with where things then go in the kitchen.
Right.
That's my system.
Oh, you've got quite a complicated system by the sounds of it. So I'm worried that I've been revealing too much now because I've never told anyone this.
No, I don't think it's that. I bet, like, people will email in and say, oh, I have things like that as well. Yeah, I'm sure. Like, I don't have this particular thing for once, but it seems like I think I have it the other way where I would think, oh, maybe if I just do this different, then everything will be okay.
Oh, the opposite.
Like my life has just been on this track of doom, which there's not that much empirical evidence to back that up, despite what I might feel like 90% of the time. But I still think I'm just looking for the one thing that's going to fix everything.
It's going to change it, change everything. What I'm most worried about now is that what if the action that triggers my death alarm is actually me telling people about my insane thoughts that this exists? I'm not going to shut up now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, can I just do a little advert?
Yeah, please.
Sarah is on tour and she would love for you to go and see her. I would love for you to go and see her.
I would too.
Because it'll help my family finances and maybe Annabelle will get a nicer Christmas present.
I was thinking more that, you know, it'd bring you both happiness. And also I was thinking the person who goes and sees it get happiness.
It will bring them a lot of happiness. Trying to think where she will be when this podcast hits the racks, which is only tomorrow. So if you're listening to this on Wednesday, she'll be in Glasgow tonight, then Newcastle tomorrow, Aberdeen on Friday, York on Saturday, Manchester on Sunday, then she's in London all of next week, and quite possibly a bit of the week after, before, as the month goes on, going on to Crawley, Leeds, Tiverton, Cambridge, Birmingham, Leicester, Nottingham, Selby, Swindon, Cardiff, Oxford, Guildford, Norwich, Corsham, Maidenhead, Bristol, and culminating in Brighton on the 14th of November. I'd love it.
She's very good. Her show's a great night out.
She is good. She is. I wouldn't. I'd feel too embarrassed to recommend her to drifters otherwise.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
So Sarah Baron, and she's doing. In a way, it's kind of like a greatest hits of her two Edinburgh shows.
Oh, is it?
Because it's her first tour.
Yeah, yeah.
So she hasn't done that stuff around the country. Mm. But the title is her second Edinburgh show, which is Enemies Closer. And I think she's great. Reader, I married her and all that. Another thing she's doing at the moment is if you send her a WhatsApp message, I shouldn't really be telling you about this because in a way it's competition.
What do you mean?
So if you send Sarah a WhatsApp message just saying hello, you don't need to get into it with her. She will then add you and send you a voice note of like 2 or 3 minutes every day.
And does she add you to a group?
So you're not in a group. So other people, you're not in a group. Other people can't see your number. So she's just sending it to you directly. But she is the same message that everybody gets.
Oh.
Maybe she, like, if you, I think sometimes if you reply to her, she'll send you one back, and she like backs and forths with people. But what I mean by this is she's not going to add you into any group where people can see your details.
Yeah.
And she's not going to use your details for anything other than sending you messages from her.
Mm.
So here is her number if you want to add her. I think because she's away so much, she's traveling around the country. She doesn't drive, so she's doing most of it on public transport. So she's got all these hours to fill in. I think she really likes it when people join her group. And some of the drifters have joined and have been great with her. You know, I've recognized some names as I've been peering over. Who's that texting you at this time of night? But, you know, Paul Newbegin.
Oh, yeah.
I think he sent her a spreadsheet with the best places to eat in every town.
Oh, fabulous.
I know. And I looked at it and it's a good list as well.
Oh, brilliant.
Anyway, so her number, if you just send her a message saying, hello, like you don't, I know the drifter in you will think, oh, God, I don't want to interact with somebody. If you don't want to interact with her, just send her a hello. She'll send you the voice note. Nothing is expected. Think of it as a mini podcast every day, letting you know what she's up to. Here's the number. It's 07-398-627-659.
I want to join it. Is it weird if I join it? Will she find it weird if I join it?
No, I think she'll send you a message just saying you do know that this is a voice note that I'm sending out like a podcast
any
day.
Yeah. I'd like it.
Yeah, I think you should join it.
Okay, I will do it then.
I don't listen to them, not just because I'm not on WhatsApp.
Oh, yeah.
But I think my behaviour... and various marital disputes are often...
Can't wait.
often a topic of conversation. In much the same way that they are on this podcast, but you're getting the other side
of it. Yes, exactly, yeah.
But I'll give you that number again. It's 07-398-627-659. And if you are in any of those places that I mentioned, or you can get to them, or you fancy a night out in one of those places, then she's on tour throughout this month. And next month, Sarah Baron... Sarah with no H, Baron with two R's. Now, what else can I tell you about? Oh, on the subject of live entertainment, I saw a poster for Monopoly Live.
What, the game?
Yes.
Count me in.
It says a brand new high octane way to play the planet's favourite board game.
No.
I did think when I saw high octane, I thought, well, they haven't played it with Annabelle because it doesn't get much more high octane than that.
Exactly.
Tipping the board over and so
flying
on.
Flying in the air, yeah. Communist.
But I just thought, isn't that just London, really? Buying property in London, isn't it? If you want the high octane thrill of the game of Monopoly, it's just becoming a property developer in London.
Yeah, I suppose that's
although
that's
I suppose the cost, the barrier to entry, the price point is perhaps a little prohibitive.
And you don't normally turn four houses or five houses into a hotel. It's not generally how it works.
It's happened. Just knock them through.
How many times has it happened?
Houses being knocked through and turned into hotels.
Yeah, how many times has it happened? Rough guess.
Many.
Many?
Have you been to Bayswater?
Oh, okay, all right.
Like all those would have been houses at some point, and they're the little flea pit hotels for builders who come down from the north.
Okay, take it back. Take it all the way back. Huh. Wish I'd never said it.
I haven't done any more Googling of this Monopoly Live, though, but I saw the poster and I thought, I wonder if you could go dressed as a thimble.
You'd want to go as a thimble, not the iron.
I don't know. The iron is a weird one as well, isn't it? I was thinking about the status symbols of like the yacht and the racing car.
There's an iron.
the iron is
the boot. The boot I sort of get. It's the iron that's the thimble.
So the boot is
ones.
Like if you're kind of on Skid Row,
yes, yeah.
Old Kent Road
that
as
makes
was.
Sense, yeah.
Yeah, the iron's a little confusing. Mm. The thimble I always assumed was like somebody was playing Monopoly with the family and one of the pieces was missing, so they just got something out of a box,
mm-hmm.
out of the sewing box. Oh, it's a thimble. That's about the right size.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it somehow graduated to being a piece in its own right.
Do you know how it started off, how they became...
I think it's an urban myth, but tell us.
No, I'm not going to say it then.
Is it about the charm bracelet?
No, I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say something different. No, definitely wasn't going to say
you
that.
You might be right. You might be right. I don't know.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
What else was to say? Okay, how are we doing for time? We're all right. Okay, right, I'll throw some things. Quick dilemma. Went for a meeting with three other people the other day,
mm-hmm.
in a restaurant, quite a nice restaurant. I got there first. They said, you're the first to arrive. Show me to the table. It was a nice banquet, sofa, bench, whatever you want to call it, and then two chairs the other side of the table. Which one do you take if you're the first person there?
God. Well, you want to be looking out, don't you, to greet them. You don't want to be sitting there with your back to them.
Exactly, yeah.
But then you look like you're greedy for sitting on the comfy
yes,
seat.
Yes,
terrible.
But also,
terrible.
If you take one of the seats which isn't the comfy, you're kind of blocking the way in round to the bench for the other person. Yeah, okay. You're not, no.
It's very, very, very difficult.
Yes, yeah, okay. Well, no conclusive answer there. What else did I do? Oh, I went to the British Museum.
Oh,
with Jean, we went to an exhibition about Nero, the founder of the coffee shops.
Oh, cafe, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. About Emperor Nero. It's very interesting. Here's a question for you. If you are... if you're looking at stuff in a museum, and I guess it applies to an art gallery as well, but... a museum specifically, like if you're looking at, say, an amulet or a goblet,
mm-hmm.
a coin, how long do you have to look at that object for?
What, to show that you're interested?
Yeah, what's
respecting
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Honestly, I couldn't care less. Like, you can glance, as far as I'm concerned.
That's how I feel generally, right? Mm. And I remember, I think I've said this before, reading something where Kurt Vonnegut said his daughter had said that she would happily go through an art gallery on roller skates. Going, yes, yes, no, yes, yes, yes. So I do get that. What makes it complicated is, what if somebody else is looking into the cabinet at the same time, so right next to you? I feel then it becomes a game of chicken, because I don't want to be less respectful of the ancient object than the person next to me. But I worry that by staying there, I am forcing them into a similar thing, and neither of us want to be staring at the amulet or whatever it is.
You'll be there for hours,
yeah,
feigning interest in an amulet.
I think that's usually what is happening if somebody is looking at an object in a case for more than 3 or 4 seconds.
3 or 4 seconds, yeah, yeah.
Oh, so then me and Jean went to a restaurant afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a bit of a panic situation, because he really likes a bowl of pasta. He's because he's such an unusual child, like they don't all just eat that all the time anyway. But so he wanted a bowl of pasta. I'd googled the nearest place to the British Museum that was neither a tourist trap or an ordeal for me, somewhere that was going to be nice enough for me. But and then we got there and it no longer existed.
Oh, okay,
so then he's having a meltdown, and I'm just like trying to see the nearest place. I see what's quite obviously some kind of nearby tourist trap. We head in. It's raining, so that, like, just everything about it is unpleasant.
Mm.
There's loads of empty tables. It's about 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. I say, how can you do a table for two, please? And she says, I'm sorry, we're fully booked. And there's just like this slight air that says to me, oh, it's the end of the lunch shift. I can't be bothered. I don't want to be dealing with a kid. I'm going to say we're fully booked. And I look around at all the empty tables and I said, oh, really? They said, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, we've got a load of bookings coming in. So then we walk out into the rain and he's having a meltdown. So I go on opentable.com.
No, you don't.
Search the restaurant. They've got loads of available tables.
No.
I booked one.
No, you didn't. You didn't. And then you went back in again.
Went back in.
You didn't.
So book one. It says, would you prefer indoor or outdoor seating? I select indoor. When do you want it? And it's, they've got a table available now. So I select it. I go back in. So, hi, just to let you know, I did just book a table on Open Table. So I wonder if you're mistaken about there not being any tables. I like to see the colour drain out of her face. And she says, oh, no, that must just be outdoor tables. And obviously you don't want to say outdoors because it's pouring down with rain. I said, no, it actually gave me the option of indoor or outdoor. And I selected indoor. Look.
Oh, I can't believe you did this.
And then she like pretended to get into a flap about all these bookings. She's like, well, we will need the table back in 1.5 hours.
Oh, please.
In fact, I'm having a plate of pasta with a yes. kid. Do you think either of us want to be in the restaurant for 1.5 hours?
A long, leisurely lunch with a child.
So that was unpleasant.
That was, and you sat down and ate?
Yep.
Wow.
Very tense, the whole thing.
A lot of saliva in your food.
Okay, quandary corner at the GLAP clinic here in Problematic. Who's the first one from, Annabelle?
It is from Alan.
Alan. Hello, Alan.
Can you assist me with a recent problem of social awkwardness, which my wife and I have pondered at length and come to two very different conclusions? I should explain, I'm not a drifter myself, but my wife, Grand Chancellor Sharon, is firmly on the drifter spectrum. As a result, I have followed your podcast with great interest. It's opened up a whole new world to me. The recent quandary happened to me, but when I explained what happened afterwards, Sharon and I came to wildly different solutions. Sharon's solution was not the route I took in practice and might well outdrift even Jeff and Annabelle's advice. So let's see. First, a bit of background. We live in a block of 5 houses and get on well with most of our neighbours. However, a few years ago, a new neighbour moved in who I would describe as being in the firmly opinionated bullying OAP category. In Scotland, we call them a nippy sweetie. The low point in the relationship with our neighbour came about 4 years ago when she threatened legal action over car parking arrangements. Sharon has never actually spoken to the neighbour since she's moved in. And although I always try to be polite when our paths occasionally cross, the neighbour all but blanks me and tends only to speak to me if there's a complaint to be made about us. So the quandary. Recently, I was in our local supermarket, which is just 300 yards along the road, purchasing a few basic foodstuffs. There are 8 aisles in total in this quite small supermarket. And as there is only one entrance, people tend to follow the same route around the supermarket. Down aisle one, up aisle two, and so on. This occasion was different. I enter the supermarket and proceed down aisle one, then up aisle two, as would normally be the case. However, as I walked up aisle two, who do I see coming down aisle two with another elderly friend but our unpleasant neighbour? Mm. They must have skipped going down aisle one and moved straight down aisle two. We gave each other the most cursory hellos, then moved past each other and quickly on. I could tell straight away she was not happy to see me and could only imagine what she was saying to her friend as I went past. Then as I moved down aisle three, our neighbour and her friend were moving up that aisle, so again our paths crossed. This time, she did not even respond to my slight smile and brief hello. And it happened again on aisle four. As I walked up that aisle, they came down it and our paths again crossed.
This is a nightmare.
At this point, I could only foresee the same awkward interaction happening another 4 times as we both crisscrossed the aisles, meeting about the same distance along each aisle every time. And at this point, my inner stubbornness kicked in and I decided to continue on regardless, knowing we had 4 more of these crisscross meetings in the aisles to go. I should say the anticipation of each subsequent meeting became ever more painful, even to me as a non-drifter. However, I was determined not to back down and continued to offer a weak smile and a gentle hello the subsequent 4 times the half paths crossed and still no response from our neighbour. To make matters worse, only 2 tills were open, so we ended up paying for our groceries at adjoining tills and walked... and walked the 300 yards back to our respective homes at the same time.
In lockstep.
Oh, only some 10 feet apart, all the way back. When I told my wife what had happened, her solution was that I should have dropped the shopping basket when I first saw the neighbour, left the supermarket for about half an hour, and only returned at a time when I could be sure the neighbour had left, and to then continue with the shopping. What would you have done in these circumstances?
I mean, that is extreme. I really like this. I do sort of quite enjoy, and I think it's evident in that story I just told about the restaurant.
Yes.
I do quite like making terrible people suffer a bit.
Yes.
If the confrontation is passive aggressive.
Yes.
So I do respect it. I think, though, what I really would have done is gone to the other end of the supermarket and worked my way backwards, ensuring a maximum of only one other.
Yeah, I wouldn't have left.
Cross.
I wouldn't have left, but I would have found a way to avoid them somehow, even if it meant lingering like horrendously long time on one particular aisle until they'd left.
Because you can't look at your phone, can you? Because you're looking around at the stuff. You can't just have your head in your phone, which is often a good get out.
I'd be examining very closely and very deeply a lot of labels. But the fact that she ignored him every time is extraordinary. And the fact that he continued to say hello, I would have given up saying hello after the first ignoring.
Because it really does rub people's, like, if somebody really hates you, it really rubs their face in it.
Mm.
If you're cheery to them.
True. Yes, there's some satisfaction there, isn't there? Mm. So would you have done the same then?
I wouldn't, but I might do in the future. I feel inspired
yes,
by that story.
Yes, so do I. Yeah, so do I. We need to be more like Alan, don't
yes.
we? It's my mantra
be more
now.
Alan.
Yes, exactly. And this is from Jen. I have a quandary for you that popped into my head after a quandary that was discussed a few weeks ago regarding what sort of offering to bring to someone's house. The following situation has happened to me in the past and I never know what to do, so would appreciate some help in the matter. What do you do when you're hosting guests at your house for dinner and they bring a bottle of something, but you've already bought a much nicer version that you were wanting to share? Is it rude to say thank you so much to their kind gesture, then stow it away so that you can present guests with a drink that you've previously bought and are looking forward to serving? Or is it the rule that you have to drink or eat whatever they've brought, even if it's not quite as good? This doesn't have to apply just to alcohol. The same question can be asked of desserts, snacks, non-alcoholic drinks, etc. Any help would be appreciated so I can continue to attempt to get through life as a normal human being. I'm also aware this story makes me sound like some sort of regular dinner party extraordinaire, but I genuinely can't remember the last time I had anyone round for food or drinks. But it's always nice to be prepared for all situations.
Yes, this is a vexing issue. I mentioned, I think when this came up about taking things, I mentioned that I like to take cheese.
Mm.
And I've had it now where I have spent time in a good cheesemonger picking out a really nice selection to take to somebody's house.
Mm.
And then they haven't put that out, but they've put what really looks like a bunch of dairy and craft cheese slices out. And
what do you think was going on there? Do you think that they thought theirs was better than yours, or do you think they were saving yours just for themselves, or do they think they just didn't think it was the etiquette to use it?
I don't know.
It's one of those three,
isn't
it?
Yeah.
It has happened to me before a long time ago when I was a lot younger, when I took a bottle of wine around to someone's house for dinner, and it was a very cheap bottle of wine, and they served me the cheap bottle of wine I bought, and they had one for themselves, like a nice one.
What?
Yes, they were set, like, they gave me my
is it anyone
one.
I know
no this was years ago. I don't even
well
know
like you
anymore.
Know I've known you a long time.
No,
you say
no.
That like we've just known each other a short amount of time.
I was like 21 or something.
As opposed to like 24 when I first knew
yeah.
you.
Yeah, true. Like. Yeah. No, I don't know these people anymore.
Wow. Mm. Were they terrible people? I mean,
Kind of, yeah.
That's really fascinating.
Mm, mm, mm. So I haven't answered the question though, have I?
No, so
what was the question?
I think it's, in a way, it's worse if you take, and I say this as somebody who's not bothered about wine for obviously all the time been sober. And then when I wasn't sober, I probably wasn't worrying that much about the quality of the bottle of wine that I'd take. But I have had it where I have bought a nice bottle of wine as a gift for people. And then I've seen them serve something else. And I thought, why aren't you serving the one I bought? Because the trouble is there's an inherent snobbery to this, isn't there? So it's who is the wine connoisseur? who is the Somme? Is it the person? Is it the bringer or the host?
Mm. This is hard to answer. I think with desserts, I think you're not bringing dessert unless you've offered to, are you? And if you bring a dessert and they suddenly say, oh, I'm just popping to the shop to get another one, that would be terrible. That's a definite no-no. Mm. I think that's quite simple.
Yeah.
It's the wine one that is tricky. I think it does have to be served at some point.
I'm trying to think, like, so if I was a wine connoisseur and somebody like bought, in essence, like a bottle of vinegar or something to my house, I would look at it and say, oh, magnificent, thank you so much. I'm going to lay this down in the cellar or something like this. Or, oh, I know just the occasion for this. That's so kind of you. Thank you so very much.
Descaling the taps.
Well, yeah, yeah. Sarah's got a birthday coming up. I'm going to serve her that, or I've got, you know, such and such coming round for
dinner. Is anyone falling for that? Because if you bought someone a cheap bottle of wine, you know you've bought a cheap bottle of wine, don't you? Could you drop it? A bit too dramatic.
I mean, if it really is like vinegar, you could drop it.
Could you decant a better wine into the bottle? That's quite elaborate as well. It's not unreasonable.
Yeah, because I suppose you're not like kind of checking the label and sniffing the cork at somebody's house, are you?
You go into the bathroom, pour away the cheap wine, and then fill it with the wine you want. That's all right. But I think in essence what we're saying is you do have to serve it probably.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you do. I think there's a way of accepting it as a gift.
Okay. And acting like it was a gift that won't be used now. Okay.
Yeah. But the trouble is if you get into some kind of standoff about who knows more about wine.
Mm.
So if you know that you've kind of bought this horrible cheapo bottle from the petrol station, you would understand why they were going to serve the better stuff. You wouldn't feel slighted, right?
Yeah.
However, if you bought what you felt was a really good bottle of wine to impress them or as a nice gesture, and then either they didn't know anything about it and they couldn't tell the difference between that and the petrol station stuff, or worse still, you felt that they thought they knew best and their wine was better than your wine, then it gets into this standoff thing.
If you bring chocolates, are you expecting them to be served?
Yes.
Me too. Okay. That's clear cut.
Yeah, but sometimes people don't do that.
I know, it really annoys me. I feel like, yeah, are those chocolates I bought? I want some.
Do you know what there needs to be for some of this stuff?
Mm.
Remember the old public service information adverts about not flying a kite too close to electricity lines or not dropping a toy on some escalators?
Mm.
There need to be those kinds of films, but for bits of social etiquette.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Let's contact the government.
Yep. All sorted.
And that was our podcast. Thank you to you for listening. Thank you for your quandaries. We would like more, please. We'd also like your stories of social ineptitude, the stuff that is stuck inside of your head as you move through life, that's layer upon layer on top of the bedrock of associations. That was something that came up on this week's podcast that we'd like more of, please. It's hello@adriftpodcast.com. Same email address, of course, for podcasts. We'll get on to this week's in a second. Thanks to Man and the Echo for the backing music and to Emily Harrison for the incidental music. Kim Rainey designed our artwork. Paula Gowlett took the photos. And I'll finish by reminding you that for tonight's starter, we have Gestapo soup. Right, this comes from Maya, to rhyme with fire, Bosley, who says, hi, Jeff and Annabelle.
Hi.
I love the name Bosley. Do you want to know why?
Yes.
One, association with Tom Bosley, the dad from Happy Days.
Okay.
Two, there was a village not far from Macclesfield called Bosley, and there's a hill there called Bosley Cloud, where I used to walk my dog when I was a teenager.
I love that name.
Bosley Cloud.
Oh, beautiful.
Maya says, I'm writing to request a publication, please, for the 6th or the 13th of October for myself and Lois Lane. As I am writing this, I have just found out that I've been scheduled for surgery on Friday, the 8th of October. The procedure is fairly routine, but the thought of going into hospital for something significant on my own is quite nerve-wracking. Well, of course it is, Maya. I've consequently decided to stockpile as many of my favourite podcasts as possible to listen to in preparation and recovery. As soon as I told Lois about this, she immediately offered practical help and care packages, which reflect very accurately on the matter-of-fact kindness with which she approaches life. Lois introduced me to this podcast back in 2019. That was a good year, I think. I think so. Before the pandemic.
Oh yeah, that's what makes it good.
I don't know if I thought it was good at the time, but now looking back on it, you really appreciate it, don't you? And fittingly, we are planning to come to see Sarah's tour together at Soho Theatre in October. That's even without hearing my little advert there. I desperately hope that I will be sufficiently recovered to go to the gig and enjoy our evening with the long-winded earnestness that it deserves. If Sarah sees me trying not to laugh, it's only because the stitches hurt too much. I might tell her that the next time she comes back depressed seeing somebody in the audience who doesn't seem to be enjoying themselves. Say, what if they were internalizing because they were recovering from surgery?
We'll say, I know for a fact they had stitches. Yeah. They didn't want to burst them.
So, this publication is for me and Lois. For me, I hope hearing this encouragement from your past self will take the edge off the pain or at least be distractingly embarrassing. Let's hope so. I think it'll be the latter. Mm. And for Lois, thank you for being such a kind friend, always open to my ramblings and willing to help at any opportunity, whether that's explaining obscure planning law or lending a bike light. Crossing my fingers that I see you soon, partly to return the bike light. Love from Maya to rhyme with fire. I really enjoyed that.
Me too.
Little tale of friendship. Had my wife in it, which I enjoy, broadly speaking. Lois sounds great. Maya, I think we know, is great.
Mm-hmm.
I hope the surgery all goes well. I'm sure it will. I hope you've got lots of good podcasts to get you through this. Anything you can recommend at the moment, Annabelle?
Oh, what am I listening to? The Diary of a CEO. I'm very into that. He interviews people who are big in the business world and also other interesting people who've been successful.
Do you think many drifters would enjoy The Diary of a CEO?
Okay. I don't know. Maybe I like it.
This is Annabelle's secret entrepreneurial side, you see.
I'm really enjoying it. I can't quite put my finger on why, but that's the one I listen to obsessively at the moment, so I can't recommend anything else.
All right, well, there we go. That is the latest podcast dedicated to Maya and Lois. If you'd like a podcation, email us hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.